What's up, guys? Welcome back to Kinda Funnies, the Karate Kid in review. That's right. We are ranking and reviewing the entire canon of the Karate Kid universe. As always, I'm Tim Geddes, joined by the big dog, Kevin Coelho.
This is a movie, you know? Like, it keeps going so long.
I do know.
We got the Nitro Rifle, Andy Cortez.
I mean, Kevin, it's not a 2.5 hour movie, but it certainly
feels like it.
Making his return.
At one point, I paused it. I was like, 30 minutes? How do I have 30 minutes left?
Yeah.
We have the producer / seducer, Nick Scarpino.
What are you going? Seriously, guys, what are you going to do about my hawk? What are you going to do? I'm not going to leave your car until you. Dude, who cares about your fucking hawk? Get out of my car.
Get out of my car. Oh, and of course, we have the man that broke a stick in the woods with a karate chop when he was 9, Josh McCouga.
Guys, let me tell you something. If you're going to go to high school in Boston, you better be prepared to deal with a paramilitary organization run by Michael Ironside.
What the actual fuck, man?
So
Wait, was she in college?
No, she it was a high school.
Oh, okay.
She was like 15. She was basically, I mean, she went to the senior 15. Prom, but I don't know if she like was a senior or not, but I know like the guy Eric was supposed to be a senior, I guess, because they went to the senior prom.
What I don't understand is at a senior center, the guy was like 50.
Dude, I mean, yeah, that guy's at least 45 years old.
I know we make these jokes all the time. There's like so many movies that we've done where it's like this person is clearly 38 years old. They're supposed to be a 21-year-old. But this is like the most egregious of all of them, where all of these guys,
hands down,
they all look like cops. They're all just like they're all 42-year-olds. Like,
Walter Goggins looks young for like, Walter Goggins looks like. Yeah.
Sorry, Josh.
He goes by Walt in the credits. If you guys notice, he goes by Walt Goggins.
Yeah.
And also, too, is he's had the same hairline since he started acting.
It's unbelievable.
Which is a severe widow's peak, which would, you know, would move you towards maybe he's 35 and isn't in high school. And then you have the guy who's the love interest working as like a train security man in high school. You can't do that. That's illegal.
Yeah.
Well, at least
25.
Guys. We do this every week. You can watch it live on twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames, or you can watch it later on youtube.com/kindoffunny or roosterteeth.com. If you want to get it as a podcast, just search your favorite podcast service for Kinda Funny Reviews. If you want to get the show ad-free, patreon.com/kindoffunny is where you want to be. Today, we are talking about the next Karate Kid, which was the only Karate Kid movie I had seen until very, very recently, because it was Disney Channel ad nauseum.
You've never seen it.
Oh, no. I'm saying the opposite. This was the only one I saw.
Oh, this was your intro to the franchise.
This was. Yeah.
Okay.
Released on September 9th, 1994, directed by Christopher Kane, whose previous credits included the Jim Belushi inner city school drama, The Principal, and Pretty Boy Western, Young Guns. That do anything for you guys?
Young Guns is a great
movie. Young Guns is amazing.
Young Guns, too, not so
Young
much.
Guns. What? Mm.
Young Guns
Kevin.
2?
Oh, Emilio Estevez, right? That's what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah,
right?
yeah.
Yes.
Both of them were Emilio Estevez. Yeah.
I mean, Young Guns and Young Guns 2 they're legendary here amongst like Mark Ellis, Ken Knapsack. I mean, it's like our favorite one of, and it's not Bad Boys. I understand it, but it's basically Bad Boys in Western.
Yeah.
Film,
yeah. So. Pretty much. Yeah.
That's pretty fucking cool. Yeah. A budget of $12 million. And Andy,
it shows.
Andy, a box office of $8.9 million.
Oh,
that's so bad.
Man. It's so hard to operate at a loss when your budget's $12
million.
It's just crazy. Because usually we hear about these movies and it's like, yeah, this only cost $2 million to make and it made $498 million or whatever. Like, it's always like the horror movies that we talk about. But $12 million to make $8 million, that is really bad, dude.
Yep. And a runtime of way too long. way too long. An hour and 47 minutes.
No way. God, it felt so much longer.
So let's get right into it. Andy, you weren't here last week. You weren't able to talk about the masterpiece that is Karate Kid 3.
So
now you're ready. You're back. It's good to have you back too, McCouga. I know last week we had some version of Terry Silver here, but
yeah.
But Andy,
got into my apartment. My wife's now pregnant. It's a whole scene. It's crazy.
What are your thoughts, Andy Cortez?
I missed you all. I loved last week's movie. This movie was just extremely boring. It was hard to care about any second of this movie. And we get to the very, very end, and I somehow care even less than I already had. And it becomes entertaining because of how, just because of how dumb it is. When I think of Eric McGowan, and you know how Henry Cavill had a contract where he couldn't shave his mustache in Justice mm-hmm. League when he did reshoot, so they had to CGI out the mustache from mm-hmm. Mission Impossible?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I got to assume that the guy who played Eric McGowan was also filming a movie shot like that was set in 1972, and he couldn't change his hairstyle.
Yeah.
Because what, like, everything else about this movie, very 90s, right? We're talking about the bad guy's hairstyle, very Sean Hunter, parted down the middle type hairstyles. Yep. But why is this guy rocking the Marky Mark Boogie Nights hairstyle? I don't get it. It's like what I fixated on the most.
He looks like a male Farrah Fawcett in that like famous yes. poster. It's like a
very feathered Makuga. Yeah, I thought this movie was pretty bad top to bottom. And when we're getting towards the conclusion, before the paramilitary group comes down from the ceiling. In what? The high school gym.
What was the fucking point of that?
I don't know, but I love when the guy breaks his arm and they're like, hey, your friend broke your arm. And he's like, hey, man, at least he was brave to do it. Brave enough to do it. Like, why did you do it in the first place? Anyway, before we get to that part, they have to figure out we got to have some sort of B plot here. And it's the month's bowling.
Yep.
I just don't understand what the hell the point was of any of this movie. I thought it was pretty terrible, man. Awful movie.
But Andy, all things being equal, if you took one section of this movie out and you could watch it again and again, it would be the monks bowling, right? Like that was the best part of the movie.
I want to see that movie. That's the movie that I want to see.
I do like the idea that they won over, obviously, this very intolerant man when they walk up to his bowling ball. He's like, hey, this ball's real expensive. You better not be using it. And it's like everybody in this movie, if you're a stranger, you hate the other person. Like, it's clear. We see Miyagi walk up to the group after McGowan gets his ass beat. And immediately the fucking coach or whatever he is, this drill instructor is like, who the hell are you? It's like, maybe he's a parent. I don't know.
Chill out, bro.
It's very bizarre. Everybody's so hostile towards everybody in this movie. It's terrible, dude.
But it's one of those things where, like, at first I was like, does she go to a military academy? Right. Yes. Because we start the movie off with Miyagi being honored, and you're like, oh, maybe Boston, this part of town is like, that's a military academy. And and they've sent her to that school because she has a bad attitude and she has some issues. So like they're trying to whip her into shape, quote unquote. But then you don't get any other indication that that school is not a normal run of the mill high school, except for out on the lawn in front of where all the parents can see, Michael Ironside is just murking all of his students one by one. Like,
if there's anything that's consistent with all four of these movies, it's that the parents of kids that take karate are awful people.
Don't
they're
care.
Like, yeah, go ahead, hang out with an old Vietnam military guy that's going to punch you in the throat. Oh, don't worry. You guys want to go to a cool school? You're going to hang out with Michael Ironside, who is also a cop, but at the school too.
Yeah.
Like, there's no consistency. All of a sudden, he just appears out of nowhere as a cop.
I don't think he was a cop, though. I think he was just friends with the cop and would, like, hang out. Like, I think he did one of those, like, the
cop
neighborhood watch things. Yeah, neighborhood watch things and would, like, go with his friends, which is weird. I have a question.
Oh, go ahead, Kev.
Real quick, just something I don't understand. Did Miyagi move into their house and the mom leave? Or did they move to the grandma left?
Yeah, yes. She's gone. She's not coming back either, by the way.
Wait, so
she's in California.
No, Nick's lying.
No, I just was really confused about that because she didn't seem to know the neighbors. I thought she moved to California with him, which all of that is weird. Why would some woman be like, yeah, I mean, have my granddaughter and maybe teach her some stuff. Tell her to, teach her how to calm down. That's weird.
So, So what I got from it was that they were like, they were having trouble communicating because obviously her parents had died and she had to raise this kid. And so they were not communicating. So Miyagi was like, hey, I'll stay here with her. You take off, take a little vacation, get like just reset, go all the way across the country, stay at my house, and I will just randomly take care of your daughter who really doesn't know me at all, granddaughter at all. And I will teach her karate and make her a better person. And then
she has a hawk friend. Why was the hawk a part of this movie? Just
the
hawk.
Well, it's the point of the backstory where the hawk gets shot, but like doesn't snitch on anyone, you know?
I want to really go back to
the hawk gets shot.
Yeah, the hawk got shot.
Yeah.
Right? But they don't tell us how or why.
Yeah.
It's got a neither will hawk.
Somehow it's got to pass. And I want the movie sequel of the hawk getting shot and the monks bowling. I want to get really quick. I want to get back to Michael Ironside because him being sort of the instructor of this place. Did you grow up in a small town sort of thing? Because where I grew up, there are a lot of teachers that knew my parents back when they were in school. Right. Yeah. That was like a common thing. Oh, I knew your dad. I knew your mom.
Sure.
Blah, blah, blah.
Sure. Sure.
You got to assume there's a lot of parents like, wait, he got hired to be the what? No, he cannot be coaching. Like, I went to high school with this man, and he's psycho. This man is a psycho.
He's clearly mentally like a very unstable.
Unhinged. Yes.
Right. And
on multiple occasions, he tells people finish him in like a kill this person. Yeah. And they're like, what do you think I'm training you for?
And now, Kevin, let me ask you a question.
They blew up McGowan's car.
Yeah, they have crossed. So that's what's so crazy about this, right? Is obviously the Karate Kid movies get kind of more and more absurd as they go on.
That's a good point.
But like, again, the first Karate Kid was just about bullying, right? It was about, and you kind of understood why Daniel didn't want to tell his mom because he was embarrassed or he thought he should handle it himself. It's all those like growing pains of you're a teen and you don't know how to deal with this situation. You don't know that you should go to an adult or a principal and say, hey, this guy's like physically assaulting me. You don't know these things. But in this movie, the very first thing that happens to Hilary Swank, I'm like, you need to go to the principal right now. Fucking now.
That's sexual
assault.
Go to
any teacher right now. This guy just sexually assaulted you. Like, this is not cool at all. No. And then it's like, all right, we'll teach her some karate for a couple of days. She'll be fun. No. Get the cops. Get him in right now. This guy should be in jail.
She goes to the cops. She goes to the principal. And they like turn that whole system on its head by being like, the cops and the principal believe these kids more than they believe her.
It's true. And that's horrible. But this is one of those situations where it's so hard to watch and try to have and have this be a fun movie when that kind of shit, that serious shit is like happening to your main character. Where like at no point did you think that they were going to fucking kill Daniel LaRusso in the first movie. But in this one, you're like, this might end with a murder, like a multiple murders and multiple people going to jail. So that when she's like trying to practice her high kick on the rock garden, I'm like, get the fucking authorities and like somebody call the federal government or something. Get someone else involved in this.
Legitimately, this guy is running an illegal like. Okay, so first of all, they're dressed like SS agents. He has them like in all black with a red patch on their shoulder. Who approved that one? Okay, then he's basically Ironside's like, yeah, make them Nazis. I'm into the SS. And as somebody, okay, this is good, like one of those, you know, name dropper situations. He came into a Collider Live like a few years ago.
Hell yeah.
The guy is very serious in person, and I did not like him much at all. He was like kind of mean. Like he was definitely a surly old man. So the fact that he is Michael Ironside in real life as he is on the movie, like every Michael Ironside character is Michael Ironside, right? Like he's not going to come out and be like, hey, Kevin, I bought you a brand new toy for Christmas. It's a big pudgy little porg. I'm so excited to give it to you. Michael Ironside would literally rip the porg in front of your face and punch you in the neck. Like that is what this is. And so he's now training men like high school. These kids are clearly men. They're in their early 30s, but they're in high school.
Yeah.
Okay. And he's training them to literally be killers. And the principal's like, welcome to high school. We have killers on the loose.
We approve of this.
Instead of a crossing guard or like a hall monitor, it's literally SS agents in a high school.
At one point, he says, if you see a kid drop a candy wrapper, make him eat the candy wrapper. And the other guy's like, yeah, okay, that seems like 1994.
This movie is very bad, and awesome. it bummed me out because I've been having such a good time with this franchise, as you all know. But this is truly, truly everything wrong with these movies, and it does none of the things right. And that really sucks because there's a couple things about this that could have been cool. I like the idea that for the first time, we're getting a relationship with Miyagi that isn't immediately accepted. Like, she doesn't want to work with him necessarily. We haven't seen that before, but they don't really do it that well. Then we get the whole her having to learn her specific move to be able to take things down with the rock kick. I'm just a huge fan of that, learning the thing, overcome, have the moment at the end. But it is so lame, and it's so not practical at all for karate, that it's like the crane kick was like, I love it. We're getting this is going to be the little like the drum, the spin drum thing. Cool. I love it. This is like, all right, go dance with the monks some more. What the fuck is this goddamn movie?
It's
weird. Insane in all the wrong ways of like, I love when things just get like, and now Terry Silver's here and he's the best friend or whatever. And like, all that storyline's insane. But what we've all talked about for the last 20 minutes. The paramilitary stuff, like the fact that we're using the words paramilitary, like it's just from the get-go of this movie, truly bizarre. And it never is bizarre in a fun way. It's always bizarre in a way that takes you out of it where you're like, but why is this happening?
Why?
Like, okay.
You know what it reminds me of? It just reminds me of a really bad 90s, like an episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. This doesn't read to me as a movie. It doesn't seem like this came out in theaters. This is a straight up Disney Channel, straight to TV. Like, someone got the rights to the Karate Kid, but they can't call it Karate Kid Part 4. So like the lawyers are like, what about the next Karate Kid? And the producer's like, fine, just fucking make it, whatever. And the sad part about it is Hilary Swank is an amazing actor. Like, she's, if you've ever seen Boys Don't Cry, yeah, I know, she's fucking great. And so the fact that this, whoever directed this movie was like, no, I want you to just run around like a fucking deranged 12-year-old the entire time and just slide it in about your hawk. Every single situation you have, just wait a second. And when someone asks you if you want coffee, be like, my hawk!
Nick, they got rid of Freddy Fernandez so quick in the first one, and they kept this hawk around until the last scene. It's the last shot. It's the hawk.
Well, actually, technically speaking, the last shot is a sailboat, which I have noted here because the hawk leaves the frame right as it freeze frames. So we're just looking at a sailboat and a small schooner. But that's pretty much it.
Okay. I really thought Freddie Fernandez was going to be the pizza delivery driver that almost killed her. I really thought that was going to be him.
When she does the tiger crouch onto the hood of the car.
Let's
get to the plot.
For the plot, tell us all about Miyagi and Julie-san.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the next Karate Kid, or Karate Kid Part 4, as I kept typing it over and over again and wondered why it didn't come up in IMDb. This starts in the most unlikely of places at the United States military. They are honoring Miyagi and his old squad mates with a 442nd, and Danielson is dead. Miyagi and Luisa Pierce, Miyagi's buddy's wife, accept the special accommodation. This is back in Boston, of course. Miyagi heads back to Luisa's house for a home-cooked meal where he meets Julie, who is an asshole to him. She is just an asshole. And this is why, Kevin, we don't have teenagers. They do drugs and they're all rude and they're all kind of stinky. Julie and her mom grandma don't get along. Then Luisa calls her Susan for some reason, which I guess was her daughter's name, which is Julia's mother's name, which I guess happens because my mom still calls me Matt, because I think she still wants me to be my brother.
Yeah.
Anyway, Luisa asks for help. And Miyagi tells her, listen, sometimes you got to water the flowers. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? He goes, water the flowers in California. That doesn't make any more sense to me. You just added a state's name on top of that weird, vague statement. And then he goes, why don't you go out to my house in California, chill out there, water the flowers there. We'll water the flowers here. Congratulations. You just started learning karate. And Luis is like, I am a 74-year-old grandmother.
I don't want to learn karate.
I don't want to learn karate. I'm good. Pretty.
Not sure if you can tell. My bones are brittle and I'm under AARP. I can't do karate.
Yeah, they won't. They won't insure me if I go into a fucking blood sport at 73. Julie.
I will say that Julie, you know, obviously we already talked about Hilary Swank and her accolades and how she's won an Oscar and stuff, but I think she was like 19 or 20 when she was filming this movie. And this must have been right before she became a good actor. Because like,
it had to have been. Was this before or after Boys Don't Cry?
Not good in this movie. It is. I was under the impression this movie was a lot newer than it really was. I mean, guys, this in 3 years, this movie will be 30 years old. Like, that is the most wild thing of all time. This movie was made it came out in 1994. So I was under the impression this movie came out like late 90s-ish. And when I saw it was 94, and then when I saw McGowan's hairstyle, I was like, is it 84? Who knows?
Who knows
when this movie is made?
Sorry, guys.
You know what's crazy is that, like, Andy, you're so right. It's not even, I don't even think it's shot on a normal camera. It's like a okay video camera. And I'll be honest, at points, I don't know if there was a script. Like, I think they just said, hey, you got to yell at your grandma. And she's like, I got this. I don't need words on a page. I'm Hilary Swank. I say my own lines.
I'll be good in 3 years.
Yes. And then she forgot what her lines were and just yelled words at her grandma.
Yeah.
Julie, of course, we catch up with her, and she is breaking into her school to feed her pet hawk, which she has hidden on the roof until its wing heals. Now, why she can't do this during normal school hours when she is there 5 days a week is utterly beyond me, but apparently she likes to just trip silent alarms. And by the way, Kevin, when you have an alarm system, this is a science for Kevin question. Andy, can you please?
Science with Kev.
When you have an elaborate alarm system at a high school, does it behoove you to display that in the middle of the main hallway so that anyone that's breaking in can see where they've tripped an alarm?
Was it in the middle of the hallway? I thought it was in some security room.
I don't know. She just ran past it. It was like, beep, beep. But it had like every window listed in red light.
I like that. Not a bad thing.
It's old
school,
man. It's analog. Unfortunately, the cops show up to spoil the party. So
she just have the bird, the hawk, at her house? Do you think that's something the mom would be or grandma would be like, hawk? No good.
I think that's an interesting question, because the grandmother, who of course has now raised two generations of people, might look at that and say, "Huh, she's taking an interest in something, and she's healing this thing, and this is a very positive thing. Let's kill this hawk. We have to just drive." You know what I mean? Like, of course she would. She probably like put it in the back fucking yard. We'll put a cage for it. We'll help you, and then maybe this will lead to you being a vet. A big bird vet, which, by the way, if you ever watch that on
a lot of
Discovery
money and
Channel,
big bird
is fucking awesome. They gotta like climb trees and get eagles and shit out of trees. It's so cool.
Is there really a big bird vet show?
There's I forget what it's called, but it's not called Big Bird Vet, but they basically follows a group of people in Alaska where like they get a call and she's like, "We gotta go, guys," and it's like a fire department and they gotta bring the ladder up, and then she's gotta get like an eagle that's been impaled on a branch off, but then they have to Tim. They got to put the little blinder on them first because they're freaking out. They're freaking out. But the second they put the blinder on them, which is just basically like a blindfold, they just get all docile.
I love this show.
It is the best. Anyway, the cops show up and Hilary Swank throws a fucking ginormous flashlight at it and probably just like knocks one of them silly. Thankfully, both cops
are the laziest cops ever.
They're out of shape, man.
These guys are energy.
These guys are high school cops, man. They're not trying to fucking – they're retired. These are the sunset years for these cops.
As an aside to Nick's point and the question Kevin raised about bringing the hawk home, okay, I'd just like to revisit that real quick in the sense of, okay, everybody – these paramilitary guys, I just looked up the one guy's name, Michael Cavallari. Okay, mm-hmm. He was like the main guy who eventually was in a bunch of Sopranos episodes. Okay, so
– zero lip, upper lip, by the way. Like, where is
zero
guy's
upper lip.
Lip?
I mean, his nose went straight to his mouth. There was nothing in between there. Yeah. So he knows everything that goes on at the school because he's like the head of the super hall monitors, whatever you want to call them. I mean, the funny thing is,
enforcers.
We never even got a name for the group. They didn't say like,
name. Didn't they have a cool name?
It?
Alpha Force.
Alpha League. Wait, Alpha Force is an excellent
Alpha League. You're right.
Alpha League.
Alpha League. Okay.
Alpha League,
which is, they were like Alpha setting. Force, and someone else is like, "We're gonna get sued by Marvel. We can't call them Alpha Force." Alpha Flight, I think, is the Alpha Flight's the X-Men.
Yeah.
You're making comparisons to Marvel, and all these dudes look like the missing people with the super soldier serum inside of them. Like all of these guys look like they have grown at least like 2 feet tall. Nobody looked like this in high school, dude.
Nobody.
No. Yeah.
We had this one big fat guy in my high school that had a full beard at like 14, but that was the only old guy in my high school. Anyway, just, but real quick, to go into that. So Ned, the head of the Nazi hall monitors, right, knows everything in the school.
His name should not
be Ned. It's not. It shouldn't be
Ned. So the other guy's name should be Ned, because Ned's sort of like the name of the benign guy, you know?
Yeah. His name should be like Hawk, you know?
Or Snake. Or maybe Snake and Dennis.
Okay. So
Snake and Dennis.
This Ned guy knows everything going on at the school, and he waits until like the last scene to kill the Hawk or to like kidnap the Hawk. He's known it's been there the whole time, but he's not going to do anything about it. Again, script.
Well, I think they figured it out later when she breaks in again and they catch her, because apparently Michael Ironside's like, hey, you don't need sleep. You don't need to eat. I need you to go monitor and protect the school at night until whoever broke in shows back up. So these poor guys are pulling double shifts, doing the SS training in the morning, and then they have to fucking protect the military school at night. And they're probably just like, man, I'm just tired. I would love to go back to a normal job at a coffee shop or a Jamba Juice. I digress. Back to the plot. Let's see. Both cops are out of shape, so she gets away. When she gets home, her Mima tells her she's absconding to California and leaving Julie in the hands of Mr. Miyagi, a man she has never met before, and that makes no sense. Miyagi drops Lisa off at the airport and then offers to make Julie a special dinner for her birthday, and she tells him to go fucking sand the floor. Once at school, we meet the new Cobra Kai's, now called the Alpha League, a group of really well-groomed dorks who tuck their t-shirts into their jeans. And let me tell you guys, I know this was the look in the 90s. You guys probably don't remember this because you guys were kids and probably like way more fashionable. But if you tucked your shirt into your jeans with like one of those braided belts in the 90s, fuck, you were cool. You were so cool.
The amount of girls that would flock to a human with a tucked in t-shirt in high school. Holy cow.
It's so insane. Dope. Now, if you tucked it in after the 90s, you were a giant dork, ginormous dork.
Correct. You were out on for your life.
Yeah, you got to get out of there. Ned catches up to Julie skipping class and just immediately sexually and physically assaults her. And at this point, I'm like, wow, this guy is just committing crimes here. He needs to be put in jail. Michael Ironside, his character is Colonel Dugan, catches them and takes her to the office where she tells the principal that he's like, she's been smoking. And she's like, I've been fucking smoking. And he's like, I don't believe. The principal's like, I don't believe you. To which, Kevin, any smoker on the planet would have been like, smell me.
Yeah.
Do I smell like cigarette smoke?
That would have made a lot of sense.
Smell my hands. And I know I don't mean that in any way. I just mean like, if my hand reeks of cigarettes, then I have been smoking. If not, this dude's a piece of shit. This dude's a piece of shit. I'd like to file a formal complaint. I'm going to own this school. I'm going to get a lawyer. We're going to own this fucking school. Guys, Eric really wants like
a class one felony, what he did to.
It's straight up a felony. Himself. Yeah. Then we meet Eric, who really wants to be in Alpha League, and these two have zero chemistry, which makes sense because Eric is a 45-year-old adult. Ned tells Eric that Julie is his, and I'm immediately uncomfortable with all of this. And then Eric watches her go into the bathroom, waits a couple seconds, and then goes, I wonder where she went, and just walks into the women's bathroom. Who runs this school? Oh my God. I went to high school in the 90s, and if I did this shit, I would have been in serious fucking trouble.
Yeah.
Also, the guy who plays Eric is the bad guy in the movie Brink. Not Brink, sorry.
Downhill.
Airborne.
That's right.
That's
but he wasn't the bad guy. He wasn't the bad guy. He was just misunderstood, and they're friends at the end, weren't they?
No, yeah, he wasn't the bad guy. He was the brother,
of the girl
that Mitchell Goosen fell in love with.
That's right.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't want Pretty Boy Surfer dating his sister.
Right, you know? But then they shake hands at the end, and he goes, you can bang my sister.
Was Blaine like the guy with the blonde hair and his other buddy.
Right, that's right.
Played another hockey team. Guys, Airborne is an amazing movie. It's like an
amazing movie.
It's so much better than the one where they just say just keep skating or whatever.
when we were introduced to these two characters, I was like, no, they're like, this is clearly a teacher walking up, right? This is a teacher.
Yeah. So anyway, Eric follows her up to the roof where he discovers her secret hawk. Julie threatens him with a bunch of just stupid bullshit. Just throw this in for, we'll figure out the scene during the day. And they just never rewrote this. Cause she's like, I'll put sugar in your tank and I'll start a bad rumor about you. And all. And he's
this
like,
is such a perfect
12 years old. Like how old is this character supposed to be?
This is a perfect moment that like, Andy's totally right. There was no script. Everyone is just like, all right, Hillary, just insult him. Like, figure out some things that would get him motivated. Okay, go ahead. Don't worry, we'll cut you. Some of them out. We'll cut some of them out. And then they did.
Right, they kept them all in. And the editor was like, were they supposed to cut this stuff? Anyway, Colonel Dugan is very intense. He orders Alpha League to make kids eat candy wrappers, then beats the shit out of all of his students in plain sight right on the front lawn. Dugan assaults Eric, and Miyagi steps in, telling Dugan about a bull in his village growing up, and the whole village ate the bull, which is, and then completely confounds Dugan. Dugan's like, wait a minute. Who's the bull in this situation? What is this? Who ate the bull? And the guy's like, we ate the bull. And he's like, am I the bull? What, Miyagi, you're getting a little far out there with your lessons here, buddy. Anyway, we get the point. Julie, yet again, badgers Eric to find out if he's going to rat her out about Angel, but Eric just wants to show her his car. And then he goes, hey, let's hang out. Let's go over to the train yard where I am a part-time security guard. And then he goes, I want to show you something really special to me. I want to show you the best view in the city. And then he takes her 15 feet up onto a train and goes, doesn't the world look different from up here? She goes, no, it doesn't look any different than it did 15 feet below. Yeah. This is not a skyscraper. We're not in the Steph. We're not the fucking top of the Sears Tower like Ferris Bueller did and they look down. That's a different view. This is a train yard where we're all going to get tetanus.
What Eric doesn't mention is that he actually bought that car brand new off the assembly line because he's 10 years older than actually where that car was made.
Yeah, this is back when he was working in Detroit in the 1990s.
Correct.
Yeah. Eric, we get a little backstory about Eric here. His dad walked out on them 6 years ago, so he had to get a job to help his family. Then he joined Alpha League so he can get into the Air Force Academy and become a fighter pilot. And at this point, I'm like, wait a minute.
Now there's too many plots.
Well, no, because Josh, this is what I thought. Fighter pilots, Air Force. Dugan has the ability to get people into the Air Force fighter program. Michael Ironside played Jester in Top Gun. Is this movie tied to Top Gun?
Shared universe, Nicholas.
Shared universe, Tim. You think Fast and Furious is cool with Hobbs and Shaw? Wait until fucking Tom Cruise shows up and learns karate from Mr. Miyagi.
Oh, I would pay to see that.
Oh, God, I would too, man.
I think it is a shared universe because in Top Gun, Michael Ironside is also destroying fucking 16-year-olds. Like,
oh, my God. Lawn. Yeah, but that kind of makes more sense because he's training people to actually go to war. In this one, it makes no sense. Anyway, Julie never thinks about the future. All she cares about is Angel and being super mad all the time. And again, I had a note here that's like Hilary Swank is just playing this character so young. It's just weird.
That was another moment of like terrible, terrible writing. What do you mean you never think of the future? Go ahead and ask me what I'm planning to do tomorrow. I don't know. The day after that? I don't know. What about in two minutes? I just want to make sure my hawk's okay.
Here's what I'm gonna say, you guys.
Thanks, Kevin.
When I was in high school, I didn't think about the future either. I just thought about where my next cigarette was gonna come from or what burrito I was gonna get next. That's what high school kids are for. In fact, I bet if you Kevin Spencer is in college, isn't he? I bet if you reach out to him, you're like, what's your plan for the day? He goes, I don't fucking know. Because kids don't have plans. Nobody's trying to fucking climb train yards and raise hawks and figure out how to become a naval fighter pilot. It doesn't make any sense.
So she didn't have really any other people in the school. Like, I didn't see anybody else at the school but the paramilitary organization and Hilary Swank. That was it.
Well, they only had $8 million.
They were like a bunch of like 12-year-olds walking around.
Yeah.
Like, everyone that wasn't them was like the appropriate age or a little too young to be in high school.
Later that day, Miyagi walks in on her changing, gets really embarrassed. He used to barge in on Daniel's son changing all the time. Never seemed to bother either of those people because boys will be boys. I don't know. Did you ask Daniel? Maybe he was like, fucking, how about a lock on my door? Bro?
Hey, old
it's
man.
Cool that we're friends, but like, I do need some privacy every once in a while. You got to fucking.
That was fucking weird. And I just like, the way that they talk about Daniel in this movie is just so.
He's dead.
Flipping. Right? Like he might as well be fucking dead.
We don't know what happened to Daniel, but it wasn't good. Maybe the bonsai tree shop went south. Maybe he's out in California running that bonsai.
What I'm saying is like Daniel's son couldn't join because he was knee deep in receipts from all the bonsai trees they sold.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah. They're crushing out there.
I just love though that there's this whole like it must have been a long time where Miyagi wasn't with Daniel, and it's like, what happened? What?
Yeah.
How did Miyagi get here?
I mean, at this point, Daniel's got to be in his mid-20s, right? So we assume that he's just a full-blown man and Miyagi can do whatever he wants because he's cashing in all those bonsai checks. Well, but I mean, I don't know.
Karate Kid 3 was 89, right? So this is 5 years later. So yeah,
Daniel's and he was supposed to be starting college, so he would be technically 23, 24.
23. Yeah, 24.
Man, that's enough. I mean, when I was 23 years old, my parents didn't give a shit where I was either. So it worked out pretty well.
Why would it suddenly switch to like accurate timing? Like the first three... Karate Kid movies take place over a span of 1 year.
Wait, you're right. It is Karate Kid 3 technically takes place in 1985.
Yeah. That's true. So I mean, but we don't know. That's
I'm happy we're doing this show to get to the bottom of the real question.
When they first introduced Miyagi, though, well, not when they first introduced him, rather, but when he, I guess, drops off grandma at the airport and they're driving back and Miyagi's like, hey, I'm going to be taking care of you, blah, blah, blah. Very reminiscent of Yoda in these scenes, where when we're first introduced to Yoda, he's just kind of kooky and weird. And I had the same sort of vibe here from Miyagi when they're in the car and he's like, what do you want? What do you want for dinner? It's your birthday or what? I forgot what the
it's celebration. Birthday.
Yeah, it's her birthday or whatever. So he's like, what dinner do you want? Do you want sashimi? Do you want this and that? And he's just kind of this kooky old man, like laughing and like, I'm crazy.
But it wasn't her birthday. Her birthday was in a couple weeks.
Weeks later.
Monastery.
Right.
I mean, just Friday.
He was just trying to be nice.
Trying to be nice.
Conversation.
How did this woman come to the like mental terms of like being like, all right, fuck this kid. I can't stand him anymore. Well, sure. Miyagi's cool. He'll take care of her.
I have to imagine that she knew Miyagi very well because Miyagi was best friends with her husband. So I have to imagine it would be like how close we all are. And I would feel, you know, like if we were having issues, like sometimes you send your kid to like a you know, your brother or an uncle or whatever, just to kind of like get him out of the environment. That didn't bother me so much. What bothered me was her being like, I'm just going to peace the fuck out and not worry about anything that's happening with my teenage granddaughter who's having rage issues and I'm not sure why. And it turns out those rage issues are because she's being bullied and like abused in school and needs someone to come help her out of this. That's kind of weird. Anyway, let's go back to him teaching her karate. Miyagi wants to, let's see, he brings home all of her homework, but Julie once again is like, I don't give a shit about anything. And then Miyagi says, ambition without knowledge is like a boat on dry land. And she's like, I don't like boats. I like hawks. And she leaves. Miyagi wants to teach her something. Yeah, but then she like insults his English, and then she almost gets hit by a pizza delivery guy. But she jumps onto the hood of a car like a psychopath, and just like like kisses the guy. He's like, Jesus Christ!
I love how unnecessary the guy's like. Oh my God, I need this job. I gotta go deliver this pizza. Please don't make a big deal about me almost killing you.
And then they're back in the house and you still hear, I'm sorry. Don't do this. I'm sorry.
Are you guys sure? Are you guys sure it's okay? Are you sure?
It's so weird.
But then I love that that's back the...
Oh, go ahead, Doug.
No, I was just gonna say, that's her jumping onto the car is the literal inciting incident of the whole movie.
Yeah.
It's like, whoa! She knows karate.
I love this conversation that's about to happen because again, you know, Miyagi's like, "Hey, where'd you learn how to do that?" And she
says, "Where did you learn tiger position?"
Yeah,
yeah.
She's like,
"You jumped in when you almost got hit by a car," and she's like, "I don't know what you're talking about." But then she eventually sort of, you know, says, "Yes, you know, my dad did teach me karate," and you got to assume that Miyagi like. When he saw that, I was like, fuck, we're about to do karate right now.
Yeah,
like, it's been a while.
Yeah,
I'm back.
Not only did he say, fuck, we're about to do karate, like the next morning he went, got his towels. He's like, wax on, wax off. She's going to clean the shit out of these cars. And then she was like, nah, I've already kind of done that training. And he was like, okay, all right, yeah, let's just skip that part. Go babysit.
Never mind, no karate.
They have a scene here, of course, where she says like her parents died, and that's why she's angry because everyone like leaves her and she feels alone, all that stuff. And then Miyagi tells her that her parents' true legacy is the karate that he taught her father, and his father taught her, and that's her true legacy. And she's like, you know what? I would actually prefer my parents' true legacy be there in my life still. And then they stare at each other awkwardly for a couple beats, and then she was like, I'm never going to let you teach me karate. And then left. That scene didn't happen. Anyway, and then she has a question for him or she's confused by all this. And he says, answers are only important when you ask the right question. And she's like, God damn, are you fucking confoundingly confusing, sir. I'm going to go somewhere else. Julie plays loud rock music and hangs her stockings from the ceilings. At least I think those are stockings. I'm not quite sure. They could have been dried salami. I didn't really pay attention too close to this part in the movie. Julie wants to do karate in case Dugan's guy. She changes her mind real quick. And she says, I want to do karate in case Dugan's guys try to hassle me. And at this point, I'd be like, what do you mean this group of guys are hassling you? And I would have been like, let's sit down with maybe like a therapist.
Examine this.
Start examining this a little bit. What do you mean by this group of jacked out, steroided fucking dudes are bothering you?
At this point, he had gone to pick her up already at school and saw the paratroopers. So he understood like, oh, these are the people you want to defend yourself from.
Right.
Yeah.
Miyagi offers to teach her a lesson for 2 math papers and 1 history paper, and she agrees. He tells her to wax the car. She tells him to go fucking pound sand again. She's like, I'm going to go to the mall. And then she goes, you know what? I really do want to go to the mall. Can I? But I need some money. He's like, well, that's cool because I lined up a babysitter job for you. And at this point, I was like, oh, cool. He's going to give her all these balls, and then she's going to secretly learn how to like deflect the balls because he trained these kids in karate too, and he's got this whole little group, and then the kids and Hilary Swank are going to go against the Alpha League and fuck them up. No. They just shoot Nerf balls at each other, and there's like no point to the scene whatsoever.
Nick, you didn't think that. You didn't think that.
Dude, I legitimately thought there was some setup with it. Like, why did he bring more things? He's like, hey, you look like you're having a hard time. This is going to make them
worse. Let's weaponize them.
Well, I thought it was going to play into the karate training to some degree, but it turns out it was just a wacky montage.
The kids that were shooting, like, the Nerf guns and stuff, there was maybe only one scene of where one of them smiled, but for the most part, these kids they're going to grow up and be in the paramilitary group.
Their parents had also died, but they didn't find a hawk. So they were going through this war shit.
Right.
Yeah. Miyagi's like, can I get a hawk? Another hawk. I need another hawk. Like,
I'll tell you, if you don't have a hawk, I'll take an eagle. Whatever you can. Falcon. Julie sneaks out that night to feed her hawk, and the Alpha League once again attack her. So she breaks the fire alarm and jets. When she tries to tell the cops what happened, Dugan shows up and he hauls her in, and he's like, she's a bad egg. Let's see.
And Miyagi, the cops are like, yeah, you know what? You seem like a really level-headed guy who deserves all of our trust, especially in the policing of our community. So whatever you say goes. Don't worry about actually urging kids to murder one another. No, yeah.
This scene is so scary. They did the Jurassic Park thing. They did the Jurassic Park Velociraptor thing in the kitchen where he's walking around like, where are you at, Julie?
Yeah.
I just want to talk. And he like throws the fucking chair. Like, this guy is going to run into a lot of crime in the future.
Yeah.
Unstable.
It seemed like he was trying to rape her in that, like, right? Yeah. Like, that was the end goal of catching. Like,
it's very scary.
It's not good.
It's really bad. Like,
yeah.
They don't have to be this extreme all the time.
And then when he grabs her and he's like on the staircase and she's trying to hit the fire alarm.
Yeah, he's got her by the back of the thigh.
Yeah, very scary stuff.
So the next morning, Miyagi goes to pick her up from the slammer, and she tells him about her pet hawk, Angel. That night. The next morning, Julie asks Eric to help feed her hawk while she and Miyagi head out of town, because at this point she has been suspended. And when he goes, what did you get suspended for? She's like, don't worry about it. I'd have been like, I got suspended because that group of guys that you're hanging out with tried to fucking like murder me, basically. So maybe don't hang out with those guys anymore.
Does it seem like, not enough sort of chemistry has been grown here between her and McGowan, because suddenly he's like, are you gonna miss me? I wanna miss you. And it's like, where is this coming from?
Yeah.
Like,
I feel like we missed 2 weeks of them dating every day.
Yeah,
Kevin, yeah.
I like to imagine they did, but also it's just one of those things where it's like, man, like, that's a, I'd have been like, I don't know if we're quite there yet for me to feed your hawk. Like, that's a pretty big commitment.
I think,
you know, like, I didn't start feeding my wife's hawk until like 3 years into our relationship.
And all
I could see,
I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. No, Danielle would not ever have a hawk.
You bring up a solid point. Hawks are like very dangerous animals. Those things will literally rip your face off. He's like, it's not like, hey, can you feed my Shih Tzu puppy? No, it's, hey, can you feed this extremely wild animal bird that's been known to literally pick up small animals and tear them to shreds? He's like, I got you. I'm in a paramilitary group. I can do whatever. I'm also 60, so I've been around the block a few times.
I got a lot of experience.
If I had a crush on a girl and she was like, can you, I'm leaving out of town, I have a python, can you come feed it? Like, no, absolutely not. Am I going to do that?
I'd be like,
yeah, a python would be fine.
No, I've done a lot of dumb things for girls, though. So it's like, I can see if someone asked me to feed a hawk, I'd consider it. But you know what definitely would do?
Oh, wait. What?
Manscaped, baby. Oh, I would Manscaped. Listen up, fellas. 2020 sucked. It's new year, new balls with our sponsor, Manscaped. Manscaped is the best in men's below-the-waist grooming, offering precision-engineered tools for your family jewels and helping 2 million men all over the world get rid of hair on their balls. If you let yourself go in 2020 while in quarantine, Manscaped is here for you to reboot, stay clean and shaved in 2021. Come out of quarantine with clean balls. Thanks to the Lawnmower 3.0, this waterproof and skin-safe trimmer will reduce nicks to your two best friends. And we all know we need to reduce the nicks in our lives. Manscaped even threw in their shed travel bag to keep all your goodies stored comfortably. I used Manscaped yesterday, so I am looking pretty slick down there, guys. I'm sure you're all thrilled about that. You can get 20% off and free shipping at manscaped.com/morning. Your balls will thank you. A guy with hairy balls is like the year 2020. Don't be that guy. Go to manscaped.com/morning for 20% off and free shipping. Back to the show.
Oh, Eric agrees to take her Julie's hawk. And Hiro Miyagi
sucks.
Out of town. Miyagi, once they get to a random filling station on the outskirts, apparently, like, by the way, Boston, major metropolitan city, but the second you go outside, you just get redneck podunk hicks who are super racist and just want to assault people because they stop it.
This guy loses his shit over his dog, like,
so
being calm. Like, hey, you calmed down my dog. Now he sucks. It's just like, yeah. All right.
Okay, so Miyagi then proceeds to beat their asses because they threaten Julie. And again, physically assault her, too. One of the guys puts his hands on her. This is one of those things where I'm like, again, this is we're doing a lot of like a lot of phone calls to the police should be happening here. And I get that in Dugan's case, I guess there's a backstory where you could be like, okay, look, maybe they fought in the war together and the sheriff's like his buddy, so he's not going to like prosecute or anything. But we're like out of that jurisdiction now. Like at some point we've driven 2 hours outside of that German state. There's got to be another cop someplace that doesn't know who this Dugan guy is. Anyway, he beats their asses. And then she goes, wow, you really fucking kicked ass back there. And he's like, yeah, I know. And not really. And she's like, no, you really did. And he's like, he said something profound here that I forgot to write down. So we'll just keep going.
Something anyway. Like, did you notice fighting how, is like water. You never know what you're going to get or whatever.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
But did you also notice how weird like the editing of that scene was? It was like, all right, it's the director's there. And he's like, all right. And we're in the car and it's right after the fight and action. And Hilary Swank is like, you really did it back there. They're not even near the gas station anymore. They're in a completely different area. She's still looking behind like, hey, back there, you really did it. He's like, where? In the farm? No.
Oh, that's what he said. So he said, I forget, at one point, I don't know if it was here or not, but he had the most profound thing Mr. Miyagi's ever said. He said, you should avoid fighting at all costs, but if you have to fight, win.
And I'm like, really, really fucking cool line.
That's fucking cool as shit.
That's
it. So then they head to a random Buddhist temple, I assume, where Miyagi meditates all morning and Julie runs around screaming for him like she's 10 years old. Miyagi teaches Julie how to jump kick in the Zen rock garden. And the entire time here, I'm thinking, surely the destruction of this beautiful sand pattern is going to play into her karate training at some point, but she just runs amok in this sand garden and never has any consequences. Of course, then he does this. That's where he is. Drops more knowledge on her. Says like, hey, you'll know when to fight when you fully respect yourself and others. And then she gets like hit in the rear with a sandbag. And he's like, you got to learn to mind your surroundings, young Bruce Wayne. At dinner, Julie tries to kill a cockroach, but one of the monks saves it. Of course, all life for the monks like this is precious. Julie did not know that. Of course, she's never seen 7 years in Tibet like I have. That's a Brad Pitt slapper.
Did anybody think that the monk was going to eat the cockroach?
I thought he was going to, for a second.
Did anyone ever think that like, oh, I'm having dinner with a bunch of people. Here's what I'm going to do. There's a giant cockroach right there. I'm going to take off my shoe and kill it in the middle of the table. No reasonable Again, Kevin, human being would do this.
Get swanked, man.
And get also, swanked.
She went total swank on that one. But also, like, she's saving this hawk, right? She's supposed to, like, respect all animals, all life. She's like, no, I'm going to murder this thing with a high top.
I mean, it's a cockroach, right? If I see a roach, it's dead. Yes. Although technically speaking, you're not supposed to. I heard maybe it's a wives' tale, and Kevin could tell me, but you're not supposed to like smash them because they carry egg sacs, and the egg sacs will get in your feet, and then you'll carry them all over your house, and the eggs will just hatch, and then you'll just have nothing but cockroaches around you. But I you can teach them stuff, and they can become a circus.
That sounds like a wives' tale.
It might be. It might be. Anyway, the monks all ignore her because she tried to kill this thing. And then one day she's running around in the park and she finds in the wilderness and finds a praying mantis, which she completely displaces from its natural habitat and brings it to one of the monks. And he's like, now you're starting to get it, Julie-san. Take the animals from where they are, risk killing them, and bring them to me. We love you. Yeah. Miyake gives Julie a headband so she can learn how to use all of her senses. And it works until because he blindfolds her. But she completely loses focus and gets sandbagged yet again. I did skip the small part here where Eric just completely quits Alpha League because he gets a call from his mom. And he's like, I got to go. My mom's calling. And Dugan's like, you're not dismissed yet. And he's like, I don't care. My mom's calling. And he's like, you're not dismissed. So, like, you can't just leave. And then he's like, well, then I quit. And then he goes up and answers the phone. And it's not his mom at all. It's Julie. And he's like, hey, Julie. And she goes, hey, how about I get you into trouble? And he goes, well, I just lost my entire future because I answered this phone. But whatever.
Again, another situation where a script could have been used there.
That would have been nice.
Hey, I'm not sure if you know, but your entire plot line is you want to be a fighter pilot, and that's the only reason you're in Alpha League. So you might be a little upset that Julie prank called you in order to make sure you were feeding her live beast hawk that may or may not have ripped your face off.
Yeah, what this needed was a moment where he needed to be all in with Alpha League, and Julie needed to be like the one thing that made him realize that that thing was not a good environment for him to be in, right? Mm-hmm. He needed to sort of be a little bit more like, these are my friends and I'm conflicted about this. But from the get-go, you're like, this guy fucking hates this. He's just waiting for the thinnest of excuses to quit this bullshit my mom called. Fuck you, I'm out, guys. I don't need this. Hey, by the way, don't you live with your mom? Don't you see your mom every fucking day? Aren't you taking care of your mom? Like
you could have even thrown a line in there. It's like, my mom has cancer, and they would have been like, oh, okay. Then run to the phone. Phone. It's an emergency. But instead, it's like his mom is calling. He forgot his lunch money.
What they needed was Hilary Swank, and because of the teachings of Mr. Miyagi, show Eric the better way to live his life, and that he needed to have a moment where he's like, fuck you guys, I'm not doing this anymore, and it needed to be like a bigger thing. We get that sort of later, but he's already quit at this point, so it's like it's not as impactful.
So I just looked it up. It's actually Alpha Elite. Alpha Elite. Oh,
thank you. I must have heard Elite and just said League, so yeah, I apologize. Sorry about that, guys. We're going to call him the League from now on.
What they really needed was this teacher who goes out to tell Dugan and McGowan, hey, McGowan, your mother's on the phone. What they really needed her to do is be like, to see how Dugan treated this kid and be like, you fucking leave this class, you're out. Like, you're fucking out, you know? She sees this awful behavior from the teacher because they show her reaction to like, wait, what
She's
the
like,
fuck?
Whoa.
And they also needed her to be like, okay, I need to talk to the officials at this school because he was really rude out there. And also, I saw him destroy 16-year-olds out on the lawn the other day.
Yeah, he broke a dude's kidney.
He was punching these kids in public.
Not just like
what happens in private.
It's not just in a dojo. Yeah. Like, this is at a school.
Yeah.
And it's not like a wrestling instructor showing you a move and then goes, hey, guys, we're going to drill this live. And it's going to get a little intense because we're actually going like full speed. But I have your best intentions. He just punches Eric in the face.
Yeah.
Just for spite, just because Eric got a good piece of it, but he's like, I'm gonna fuck this kid up.
I've been waiting for this shit.
I mean, there's only two ways that could have gone, right? Is they cut to a scene of the principal like in his office with a window looking down on the courtyard, being like, that Dugan really running the All Elite. Or you have Terry Silver now in the school going, man, he got that Eric guy.
I love this guy. He's perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah, I like to believe that it's at somewhere out there in the world of Karate Kid, Terry Silva is still bitter and still plotting against Mr. Miyagi and Danielson. Yeah. Now Julie and Eric, who now runs a very successful car dealership. That's LaRusso. Sorry. Anyway, let's move on. Julie finally masters the high kick and then completely ruins the rock garden. Then we get a montage in which Julie trains under the world's saddest waterfall and then demolishes a sandbag. Later that night, when she's finished with her three-day training of karate, the monks throw Julie a party, a birthday party, so that the head monk can shoot an arrow at Mr. Miyagi, which he catches centimeters away from his heart, and then gives the arrow to Julie as a present.
Thanks for the
arrow. And I'd be like, I don't want that. And please never do that again. That's really dangerous. And Miyagi's like, well, I'll show you that if you can just focus, you can master one thing. And she's like, I got the high kick. You don't need to risk death.
Yeah. But honestly, I was so disappointed with this whole scene because it's like this is why this movie sucks. It just feels like, what should a Karate Kid movie be? This is the laziest answer. And oh, we're going to train her in 3 days. How are we going to show her? Let's have like some Yoda-esque scenes. Let's have some Obi-Wan-esque scenes, but take any heart out of it. And it make it so lame and the least hype thing imaginable. And it's like her with the sandbag was never fun to watch. And it was I never felt like, oh, she's overcoming this. It was kind of just like paint by numbers. This whole movie's paint by numbers in the worst way.
Paint by numbers? What, Tim? There was no numbers. It's literally just a guy spitting green paint against the wall. There's no numbers.
But like, pattern, yeah. The thing that she learns, like, is basically the thing from the last movie with the ropes, or the second movie with the ropes with like giant knives on them. That was more dangerous. Yeah. This is less dangerous. Yeah. They're just sacks that seem to be like engineered to not hurt that much.
Yeah. They're not really trying. Like, they tried to set up in the first Karate Kid that Daniel had taken karate to a degree, so he had some basis in it. And I guess they try to do that in this as well.
Yeah, the books.
But the idea that you could teach her how to beat five dudes who are literally training on the lawn every day with a fucking military instructor, and you can do that in like 3 days. It seems very, very thin.
Sets
like
a dangerous precedent.
Like with,
but it, does, with, it was first, 2 weeks though.
Was it 2 weeks? I guess that.
Yeah, because she got suspended for 2 weeks, and they went there.
It's just like, it's just weird. But I guess the whole point of this was not necessarily to teach her how to fight for a tournament. It was to give her confidence in herself. And it works because the next day she arrives back at school, a brand new person. Kevin, what were you gonna say?
I was just going to say, like, it's also super weird that they grant her a wish. And that her wish is, I hope you guys come and hang out with me.
All of it's so weird.
A wish and the gift. The gift is this weird demonstration, which is terrifying.
But they dance to the music, Kevin. They dance.
Oh, I
forgot that scene. They became friends.
They all became friends.
Yeah.
Let me point something out here just real quick, Nick. I'm sorry. And Kevin brings up a really solid point, is that Julie is now like best friends with these monks who have never left the monastery. But now they have a reason to leave the monastery, which is Julie. Bowling.
Oh, Julie.
Yeah. Oh, bowling. Yeah, you're right. Julie and bowling. Okay.
See, I have a theory.
Okay.
On this, that the monks aren't real monks. They're just con artists who spend their weekends going out and fleecing local bowlers for all of their money.
Sure.
Because I'm going to say it. I honestly, like, all the movies have moments that are kind of like a little bit like, okay, if you push this just that much further, it'd be culturally insensitive. This is the movie that feels the most racist of all of them. And I don't think it necessarily crosses the line like too much, but it's just the whole thing. It's like, why do we need to go hang out with monks? Like, that just feels like if you ask someone that didn't understand like anything about karate or anything about that, it's like, okay, where's Mr. Miyagi going to take her? To the monks. And it's like,
I don't know. Yeah.
And then what's going to happen? The monks are going to go hang out with her. What? The fuck?
And Tim, you also make another point there is like, if I know anything about the world, it's that the best monks live in enclaves outside of Boston.
Hmm. Definitely. Yeah, definitely. That's where most of them actually,
none of them,
that's where all the good monasteries are.
None of those monks were fighting. They were just monks that like, it seemed like they were just meditating. Monks. Yeah.
Julie arrives back at school the next day, brand new person. Her principal, who is just daft as shit, is like, oh, Julie's really got her shit together. I guess she's cool. I'm going to keep going on my fucking, I have to imagine, drug-induced fucking day because I'm out there just not giving a shit about what's happening to my students. She and Eric head up to the roof.
Nick, did you happen to catch when she comes into school and she's like all bubbly and it's like, hey, Julie, she didn't have any friends before this.
No, yeah, nobody knew who she was. Yeah. They all hated her.
Jules!
When she and Eric get to the roof, they discover that Angel has been taken by Ned. There's a little tussle there and he's like, oh no. He's like, what did you do with my hawk? And Ned, the big tough guy who is not afraid to assault anyone in any second, is like, I called animal control. And Julie's like, oh, Okay, we'll go get it at animal control then. Not, I fucking ripped its head off and now I'm wearing it around my neck to piss you off. Oh, no, I called animal control. They're taking care of him right now. And actually, yeah. It turns out that you mended the wing totally improperly. So they have to actually take some x-rays and stuff like that. Guys, they're going to take care of it. Don't worry about it.
You're not a vet. You just had duct tape around its wing for 2 weeks. Like,
it wasn't even duct tape. It was like a piece of gauze that the thing could have easily ripped off. They head to the animal shelter, and Miyagi uses his magic hands to fix Angel's wing so they can set it free. And he goes, if you believe, Angel will believe too. And then Julie goes, he's a bird. She is a bird. She cannot believe in any of this stuff. And I am basically keeping her captive because she's my only friend. And Miyagi's like, it's time to let that go. I'm your only friend now, Julie-san. And she's like, you're an 80-year-old man. You cannot be my friend. You don't know anything about prom dresses, as we'll figure out in the imminent future. They finally let him go. Well, I think this was supposed to be indicative of the loss of the parents and all that stuff.
I'm sorry. It was supposed to be pretty. I was talking about the scene that's coming in like 5 minutes where he goes dress scene. Shopping for no like reason Very without awkward. Her. Without her.
Very awkward.
And then like does a terrible job of explaining nothing to this poor woman.
It really just seems like what it reminds me of is how in the 90s, a lot of actors were cast to play roles that were pretty much the same role that they already played. Mm-hmm. And it just seems like this isn't even Miyagi. Like this is Pat Morita playing another character that's pretty much Miyagi, but in another movie in another franchise that has nothing to do with Karate Kid. And so to see this sort of like fish out of water be in this situation where he's shopping for a young lady, like his granddaughter sort of figure, it just feels off. Like none of this feels real. It just feels like they, oh yeah, Pat, we loved you in that Karate Kid movie. Do similar stuff like that, but now you're shopping for a dress. It's just stupid.
Now, what I do want to point out is that the actress acting opposite Pat Morita in this scene is crushing it because she was like, I don't know what the fuck this guy is talking about. And I am very scared now because he's like, oh, no, the dress is not for me. It's for a young girl. And she's like, okay. And he goes, oh, you know, she's got a good spinning back kick and she's not, you know. And then he starts describing her body. I'd be like this. Hold on a sec. Jeanette, can we get the police on the phone, please? Thank you. Go on. Anyway. He buys her a dress, and
this is more uncomfortable than the shopping scene in Pretty Woman, for crying out loud. I mean, oh God, brutal.
But see that? I mean, like, this could have been a really fun scene where he takes her shopping and then surprises her with like the dress, and that could have been a fun moment where, you know, they learn some stuff together. But instead, he just decides to buy her a dress. Now, here's the thing. I guess this is significant other dependent. What they like, what they don't like. The idea of buying my wife an expensive dress that may or may not fit her gives me so much anxiety. I've never
bought my wife clothes in her entire
and entire I life. Never will. I have purchased clothing items for my wife before, but she has been either standing there or she has told me the exact garment to buy. And even then, I'm like, are you sure this is the one my wife set aside?
Yep.
Are you sure about this?
Yep.
And then she's like, my wife's very big on like, surprise me with a thing that I absolutely know that I want that I already set aside. That's key to a healthy relationship. Uh-huh. Anyway, Angel flies away. It's all good. Whatever. She gets a prom dress and then Miyagi teaches her how to dance. And then he surprises her with a prom dress. She's like, hey, Mr. Miyagi, you're really good at this. You should have a kid of your own. And he goes, oh.
Burn.
We just kind of gloss past that where she's like, you'd be a really good father. And he was like, oh, fuck.
Peter McAllister, the father. Yeah.
Anyway.
The reversal of like, I'm going to teach you a kata trick. I'm teaching you to dance was so poorly executed and also such a stupid idea.
I also think, I mean, why is that, Kevin? Is it because the dance moves that he teaches her haven't been used at a senior prom in fucking 80 years? Like, nobody does. Here's how you slow kids. If you're going to your senior prom next week and you're like, I'm so worried about slow dancing, then here's what you do. You put your hands delicately around that person's shoulders and or waist, depending on where you feel comfortable with it. And you just move from one side to the other. That's not what I had a problem with. What I had a problem with was it looks like I'm having a fucking like a moment to myself when I'm trying to fast dance. People are like, what's happening with Nick? Is he have hands in his pants? What's going on? What is he
fast
doing over there?
Fast dancing is the opposite of slow dancing.
It looks like I'm on fucking drugs out there. I'm like, I think this is the Carlton. I'm just going to do the Carlton. Everyone just, let's just default to this. My two dance moves, Kevin.
Just a ton of snaps. Just all snaps.
My two dance moves, Andy, were always the Carlton, right? And then what I learned from Will Smith from Hitch, 10 and 2. Just keep him here. Keep him here.
I thought you were going to do the Men in Black thing. Oh, no, that's Backstreet Boys. No.
That's Backstreet Boys, Andy. Yeah. That's your dance. Anyway.
You, Nick, you glazed over her maybe one of her better lines in the movie, which makes me cringe just thinking about it, when her going, what if there's a waltz? I don't know how to waltz. You're like, okay, first of all, do you think this is a scene in a Marie Antoinette movie? We haven't done the waltz since 18th century Germany, okay?
It's this like is not a cotillion or a debutante ball. This is a senior prom in 1994. Here's what you're going to dance to, Tim. You know what songs were hot in 1994? We're talking probably like TLC. We're talking like R. Kelly, Boys to Men. You're dancing. You better figure out how to dance to fucking hip-hop. Clearly, you know what I mean?
Cranberries.
Cranberry is definitely huge in my senior prom.
Yeah. And also at my senior prom, the most important thing wasn't learning how to dance. It was how to sneak booze into the venue. Like, who cares about dancing?
All right. So then, Eric, the next day, the monks come to visit. And can you imagine the grandmother coming home at this point? She's like, what the fuck are you doing in my house? Who are all these old people? Eric shows up the next later to pick up Julie for the prom. And Miyagi threatens him with a knife. And he's like, you better bring her home by 10. And then Eric, in a masterful negotiation, goes, how about 1 a.m.? And Miyagi's like, all right.
Be careful.
That's it.
The threatening was like the weirdest Miyagi moment we've had, I feel like, in this whole series. I'm going to
call you little
Pishlikov. Where he's just sitting there chopping it, and just like keeps showing him the knife. And it's like, I get it, but this is so unlike Miyagi. He's so... like good about communicating with people.
Yeah, she's just pretty passive.
Not usually threatening.
What's also worth noting is that he threatens to basically cut the guy's dick off if he mistreats Julie. And Eric is the one male in her life, other than Miss Miyagi, who's not mistreating her. And the other guys that are mistreating her, he just talks very philosophically to and kind of gives them a pass. I was like, why don't you take your monks over and beat the shit out of Dugan's kids? And just let them fucking know before they decide to bungee from the ceiling of the gym. Oh, guys, anyway,
we got to set these kids straight before they bungee from the roof of the gym.
Let's see. Eric almost kills all of both of them on a one-way street as they go to the prom. And then Miyagi takes them on bowling so they can swindle some local idiots out of their gas money. What's
that? Staring at her boobs. That's why he gets in the wreck. He's like, it's uncomfortable. And how did he get on a one-way street that's like five lanes wide? When did he make the turn?
I don't know. You think she would have noticed before? Maybe she was staring at his boobs. Everyone has a great time at the prom except the guy who accidentally blows his shoulder out as the alpha league decided to bungee jump from the ceiling. Now, here's what I'm going to tell you, Tim, remember when you came in at Kind of Funny Live 3 and you came in from the ceiling? Mm-hmm. Do you remember how much prep that took? Remember how we had to rehearse that, and then you had to wait up in the rafters for like 45 minutes, and you lost feeling in your feet?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How did those guys get – how did this
– I love it. Like, but also, I feel like this entire movie happened because some of those actors pulled some strings and knew some people. They're like, make a movie that somehow gets me bungee going from the ceiling of this gym. And they're like, all right, fine. I guess we can get Mr. Miyagi.
Tim, it's just great that nobody noticed – until after the slow dance ended, and they were presumably going to go back into fast dancing.
Yeah.
When the slow dance ends, and the lady goes,
on the horizon.
Oh my God, look! And then these three guys jump down. Again, the really, really bad slow-mo. We talk about all the time how we hate slow-mo, that it's shot in high frame rate. It's just like, it's 29 frames a second, 24 frames a second, slowed down even more. Right. So the guy breaks his arm, and then again, I already said the line, but I'm going to say it a fucking again. I'm like, he broke his arm. Like, what the hell's wrong with you? And he's like, oh yeah? Well, at least he was brave to try it. It's like, what? Why is he trying it? Why are you like, doing this?
I'd have been like this. First off, that's a good question. Why are you doing this? Second off, you didn't invite me to try it. It's not like you gave me Eric. They didn't call Eric and say, hey, we're bungeeing tonight. And he's like, nah, guys, that seems too dangerous. They never even told him they were doing this. I'm like, your argument is completely null and void. And then thirdly, this is just a safety tip for anyone bungee jumping. If you're about to bungee jump off of something, A, make sure your rope is the proper length. And B, look down below you to make sure there's not a fucking gazebo down there that you're going to smash through.
You literally had all of the time to measure where you were going to jump from.
Yeah.
And you were like, I'm not going to hit that gazebo. It's the only thing in the gym that I could hit, but I'm not going to hit it. Don't worry about it.
We also have to talk about the reasoning for why they even did it.
Thank
because
you,
it
Andy.
Seems like at this, it seems like at this point, Kevin, that they don't even like it's not until they're landed and then they're pissed off and they go their separate ways that guy with the no upper lip, 28-year-old, been doing steroids
Ted.
His whole life.
Ned
sees McGowan with Hillary Swank and goes, oh, fuck, they're together right now? So, like, I don't know what the initial jump down was
for. No, he's known for a while, right?
He's known that, like, I don't know. It feels like that was the moment where he's like, oh, shit, I got to go confront this. Because there was no need to confront it beforehand, but they still bungee down. And I don't know what the point
is.
There's
a conversation that they should have filmed where it was Ned sitting there talking to the leader of the Alpha Elite, just being like, and then get this, we bungee cord down, and the Alpha Elite guy was like, that's gonna be really fucking cool.
That's gonna be cool.
Do you think we should?
You know what it is?
Let's fucking do it, dude. Ned,
but why?
You know what it reminds me of? Like, did you guys ever have a group of friends that like just you were like, you guys were not cool? But they were the friends that thought they were cool. And you're like, I know I'm not cool. You guys aren't cool either. And they would always do things. And you're like, guys, people are going to fucking love this. And you're like, no, they're going to think you're nerds and dorks. Don't do that thing. And they're like, no, we're going to tuck our t-shirts real hard into our fucking jeans and get our braided belts. And then we're going to – and this is finally what people are going to think we're cool. It's like in this high school, the Alpha Elite are just a joke. They're like way too extra, and everyone's like, "Oh God, those guys are fucking back. Like, why are they always wearing just the same like uniform? It's so stupid."
Let me. Anyway. Okay. Also, though, and I feel like nobody has even mentioned this before, and this was my immediate thought. Yes, there was no impetus. Yes, there was no discussion. Yes, they came out of nowhere. But also, why bungee and why not rappel? Because when you bungee down, you then have to like climb back up, unhook your feet. You're dangling upside down. There's no like, or you couldn't like if they rappelled down and like landed and unhooked, and they're like, time to start the prom, fast dance, right? Like that would have been cool. But instead, they bungee, they bounce. A guy breaks his arm, and then cut. They're out of the bungee cord, and Ned's gone. Like, "You motherfuckers, you bunch of pussies." We're like, "Whoa, like, hold Ned!"
On. Wait,
hey Jack, can you check this?
Yeah, it's kind of time. Isn't weird. There? There's a shot where their friend like comes over and unhooks one of them, right?
I think so, but they needed a shot of everyone in high school being like, "Whoa, that was so cool!" But instead, they just get reaction shots of kids and being like, "What the fuck
like,
was
what's
that
happening?
You guys are lame."
Well, because the girl points them out as if they're being raided by like the cops because they know they're doing illegal stuff there. But I would have hated to be the friend that had to unhook them because you know he was like kind of sitting by the bleachers and that like kind of looking up like, God, like. I wish I could be the one.
All right. Green light. Green light for the bungee.
So ridiculous. Anyway, this scene is obscene. But guess what, guys?
Let's just say you're on set that day. You're a PA. You're like the assistant director. You're on set of the prom. Tim comes walking in and he's like, guys, listen, I know it's not in the script, but I was thinking about this last night. What if the guys bungee jump from the ceiling? And you're like, I don't know if that really fits in the plot at all. And he's like, yeah, but we got these bungee cords from a Sharper Image last night. And I think we could use them.
Yeah.
He's like, well, shit. You're right.
Might as well.
We got it. You know what they say, Josh? This is what they always thought. It adds production value. Guys, correct. The bungee scene is going to make this look like a $40 million movie.
This movie was $12 million, but we can make it look $13 million. You know,
yeah, we can make it look $12.5 million with this bungee scene. Anyway, so Ned and Eric get into it, and then Julia's like, it's not worth it. Let's just go home. We've had a great time so far, and we got to see one of them hurt himself, so that was kind of a icing on the cake. Let's just go home. Eric heads. Of course, when they get home, Ned has followed them, and he proceeds to smash all of Eric's windows and challenge him to a fight at the docks. And then Julie rightfully goes, don't go there. That's, you know, he's going to just take you to, you're going to get ambushed. Why don't we just call the cops? And Eric says, well, they won't, Ned'll just lie. And then Julie says, I've witnessed this. You've witnessed this. And not only the two of us, but a house full of monks witnessed this. Do you think the cops aren't going to believe Buddhist monks
versus a guy that is in the Alpha Elite?
Yeah.
It's like there's some problems happening here, man.
Yeah.
I got to assume this isn't his only time that he's ever done anything shady or wrong. He has a record. Like, clearly. Yeah,
this guy's been tearing around town.
This guy has like a chemical imbalance.
I mean, yeah.
Anyway, Eric stupidly heads to the dock where Dugan and the Alpha team do in fact ambush him, and they torch his car and they beat his ass. And then with Eric beaten, Dugan orders, I think Walton, how do you say his name? Walton Goggins.
Mm-hmm.
Walton Goggins to execute him. And then he's like,
no,
I don't. I think that's a lot. Like, I don't think I'm going to do that. And then Ironside's like, what do you think I've been training you guys for? To kill people? And he goes, yes, in war, where you can maybe justify that with the fact that we're defending our country, but we're on the docks of Boston. Like, this is not war, bro. And also, my hairline's receding. Should I take Propecia now or later? And he's like, I'll start taking now because I'm, you know, it's probably
you're supposed to start young. How old are you? I'm 27. Like, okay.
He's like, oh, it's too late.
Wait, why are you in high school still?
Yeah. Also,
I really like Alpha Elite.
Don't you think that Eric should have pointed out the fact that they had set up like a Mortal Kombat fight scene from the movie? Like, the trash cans are on fire. Everything's on fire. It's all set up perfectly, and I'm going to be the only one fighting Ned. Meanwhile, Ned has never been alone anytime this whole movie. He's always followed by, like, seven cronies.
Yeah.
But I do want to add, like, for Walton Goggins' character, you just blew up a car. Like, there's literally the shell of a car on fire. Yeah. Yeah, kill this guy. That's what's expected of you. How do you not fucking know that? You know what I mean?
If you all incremental, like it's you know what, like it's grooming, right? It's all incremental. Like, you start them off by just wrestling a little bit, and then you elevate it to one of them just breaks the other person's nose. Then you elevate it to torching each other's cars, and then you try to overthrow the American government. You just try to do that's where we're going with this. But you know, it's not like hey guys, first day Alpha Elite. Thanks for coming. Really glad to see some new faces, everyone. Let's welcome Tim. Today, we're going to be studying how to murder a human being. And we're going to need Kevin to step into the center. And we're all going to fight to the death. I don't know. It's weird. Anyway, Ned, Walter's like, no, I don't want to do that. And then, of course, Julie and Miyagi show up to take Eric away. And then Julie is like, they're like, you guys suck. And Julie's like, I challenge Ned to a fight. And Ned's like, okay. And then Ned gets super cocky, and Julie sweeps his leg and then drops him like a sack of potatoes. And then Ned's like, oh shit, I got to step up my game. So as a last resort, he throws mud into her eyes. But little does he know, she's been training for this all her life, Tim. And by all her life, I mean for one day in the past 2 weeks, she's been training blindfolded.
Why?
So of course she focuses herself with a kata, and then wheel kicks his fucking face.
It was brutal.
Jump spinning kick, which is like cool.
Back kick.
So first off, don't show kick in slow motion to make it even more obvious that the hit didn't connect. But I hate all of this to sort of mirror what's his face from Karate Kid 1?
Johnny Lawrence.
Johnny Lawrence. To mirror his emotions to being like, wait, Sensei, you want me to... Because, you know, obviously we got Dugan being like, take her out forever.
Murder.
Like, end it now.
Kill everyone.
And suddenly he's like, oh, okay. And they try to make him look scared. And like, suddenly he's this scared child now. You can't pull that off again. Because this guy has been like, I guess Johnny Lawrence was pretty relentless the whole time as well. But you can't just try to make us feel sympathetic for the bad guy in this one time.
In this one moment. Yeah. I felt that same thing too, where they're like, man, this is too far. Like, you're all going to jail. Sorry. Yeah. There's no sympathy for you. Also, my other big pet peeve of this movie, and it's kind of a pet peeve of all the movies, is that they get people who actually know how to do a lot of these things, like who have karate training or martial arts training, and they surround the main characters with them. And then when the main characters start doing the choreography, you're like, oh, that person just learned this move like 2 weeks ago. And that was issues I had. It kind of worked with Daniel LaRusso, because you're like, okay, he's supposed to kind of feel frail and not really know what he's doing. And especially in Karate Kid 3, like he wins by like 1 point. That's the only point he scores the entire time. But dude, like, when she throws these kicks, you're like, Hilary Swank just has zero fucking interest in martial arts. She's not trying to do any of it. Just give me the movie so I can do real material, for Christ's sake.
I don't even think when she was doing her like karate like training underneath that waterfall, that was basically just like a Moen faucet that they turned on over top of a rock.
Yeah.
Okay. And she's going like, she's basically just going like, ha, ha.
Yeah.
And
you know,
like
Josh,
you know what it reminds me of? Doing things that look like karate.
Oh, I'm sure they taught her katas, and there was a fight choreographer on this, but this, the choreography in this movie specifically and the way the fighting unfolds reminds me a lot of when they fight in Footloose and Kevin Bacon kind of fight dances people where he like, instead of kicking, he like twirls, does like a little pas de jour or whatever the hell they call it. Like kicks like
pas de beret. Yeah, you just call it a pas de jour.
I was going to call it a pas de creme, but that's a thing you eat. Sorry. All right, let's move on with
this.
Anyway,
one more thing. The mud blinds her for like a solid 45 seconds where she could just go and then be done with it. Like as soon as it happens, it's not even that much mud.
Kevin, sand gets everywhere. It's coarse. I hate it. Anyway, she beats him up and then he realizes, oh my God, I've been terrible this whole time. And Dugan's like, I'll fucking fight her. And everyone, and the guys are like, no, dude, we need you to do that. And then Miyagi's like,
you're 70. You're gonna,
he's like, you're not going to fight her because then I'm going to fight you. And then Miyagi just handles him. And he says, oh, no, but first we have a cool line. Sorry, I wrote him down here, guys. We have to say it. So Dugan tries to get the rest of the guys to fight Julia, but they're all like, dude, you're fucking insane. I'm done. I'm done with this. And then Dugan says, it's not over. So Miyagi tells him, then we finish. And then fucking backhands him into the 21st century. The gear is, I shit you not, more epic than the end of Predator. It's insane. And then Miyagi is about to put Dugan's lights out. And you think, Tim, you think it's going to be the honk. You think it's going to be the honk, but it's not. He just blows on him real hard and Dugan goes to the ground defeated. And all of his Alpha League or elite, excuse me, are like, well, we're done with this. I guess we'll try marching band because that's what the cool kids do. And then Julie tells Miss Miyagi.
Way to throw that one in there, Nick. Way to throw that one in there, buddy.
Thanks, guys. Oh, this is where she tells Miss Miyagi, you really kicked butt back there. And Miyagi tells her the real truth about fighting. He says, fighting is not good, but if you must fight, win. And then we end on a freeze frame of a sailboat, which again, I assume is supposed to be the Hawk. But the Hawk left the frame right before a freeze frame. They were like, sailing. That's what this movie's really secretly about.
Oh man, what a fucking movie. It's so weird because we've reviewed a lot of bad movies in review. I put this one in a different category where it's just like, God, it is so boring and just so lame, but it ended up being a good in review. So maybe it's not all bad. I don't know. Andy, hit me with the haiku in review.
Syllables in the middle. You'll need five for the first and last line. If you're not poetic, no need to fret it. Haikus don't need to rhyme. Haiku. In review. Haiku in review.
Everybody full stop.
You can go to patreon.com/kindoffunny to write your review in haiku form like Liz Lawson did. Mr. Miyagi deserves a better ending. Why did they make this? Salty Bob says, dude works for the school and just assaults the kids. Like, in broad daylight.
In front of everybody. Like, this guy's a lawsuit. Like, there's
not one parent that drove by was like, wait a minute, that's not cool. That is not cool. We need to elevate this to the superintendent immediately.
Here's the thing. This isn't the first year this Alpha Elite has ever existed. This has been going on for at least 2 decades since this guy got to the school. He would have been fired a long ass time ago, dude. And he would, like, there's no way.
Now, it never really went into his military history. So is he just a colonel of the All Elite? Did he like give himself that title? He's like, call me colonel.
He had to have been like the leader of All Elite in a Street Fighter movie or something. Because he's
right.
Michael Ironside, I would say, is like the king of straight to DVD, straight to VHS back in the day.
I'll give you that.
Yeah. And then the last one comes from Blackjack. Sun is warm, green grass. Julie's not in Daniel's class. This one ranks dead last.
Oh, this movie is complete ass.
Ragu Bagu.
Bagu. What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Rad Guys Talk Bad Guys here for the Karate Kid franchise. I'm your host, Nick Scarpino, alongside everyone you see before you. If you're listening to this, we've got Arnold Schwarzenegger on this podcast. He's just been silent the entire time. It's me. Number one, we have Terry Silva, Kreese, and Mike Barnes from Karate Kid Part 3. And number two, we have Johnny and Kreese from the original Karate Kid. And number three, we have Chosen and Sato from Karate Kid Part 2. Where do we want to put Dugan and Ned?
First off, Fuck yeah, last, you all gave right? him number one. The last movie that really
Yeah, we did.
Well, I'm gonna say
the guy is a Andy, the guy's a billionaire. A billionaire who takes 90 days off of his schedule running his multi-billion dollar empire that fucking hides toxic waste to exact revenge against the high school kid and a retired man. Yep. Of course he's gonna go number one.
Hold on, I just obviously I missed the last episode and I wrote down some thoughts, but I forgot my favorite moment in the movie to describe to you what kind of a bad guy is walking up to you. Sir, the plutonium deal.
The plutonium deal. And again, there's a small portion of me that thinks plutonium, Back to the Future, is all of this tied together. We don't know.
There you go. Yep. I'm so happy you appreciated it, Andy. This goes last. And I can kind of see an argument for potentially putting it above Chosen and Sato just because of how ridiculous the alpha elite is. Like, when you really break down like the fact that this is a paramilitary thing, it's like, what the fuck? But they don't do anything interesting at all. Yeah. There's no fun moments with them. So,
what we needed to make this movie as fun and as dumb as part three or part two, and have it be on the level of, like Nick always talks about, good movie, good bad movie, bad bad movie. You know, we needed this movie to be in the middle. Mm-hmm. We needed her to not go to this monastery. Like, she needed to interact with the bad guys more, so we could see them be more and more ridiculous, so that we could laugh at it. But they just didn't have a whole lot of interaction. And so this serious nature of their back and forth, it just feels more like it doesn't make sense and it's bad, as opposed to like, this is funny because it doesn't make sense.
Right. Just, absolutely. Yeah.
Like in Credit Kid Part 3, you could tell the producers were like, we've done the heartfelt Karate Kid. We've done the fish out of water. Let's go explore a different culture Karate Kid. And it's more about, you know, Pat Morita and Mr. Miyagi's character. What if we made the bad guy in this so ridiculous that even as we're filming it, we just keep laughing? Wouldn't that be fun? Like, Josh, let's do 30 days of filming and just make the most absurd bad guy ever. Yes. This one, they were like, I'm so tired and I've had way too much cocaine. How do we just get this fucking movie done? Okay, what about a guy? What if he has a metal hand? Yeah, put the metal hand. Fuck it. Let's have a metal hand. How about that? No, guys, we don't have the budget for metal hand. We got these bungee cords from Sharper Image that Josh gave for us. Let's use those. Anyway, this is dead last. Let's move on.
Let's rank. Now it's time to rank the movies. Currently, the rankings are number one, The Karate Kid. Number two, The Karate Kid Part 3. Number three, The Karate Kid Part 2. And number four, I presume, The Next Karate Kid. Do we all agree?
Yes. I would like to argue. Let's all try to argue this for number one. Let's just go around and spend 30 seconds and see if you guys can find anything redeemable with this movie to put it at number one. Andy, starting with you.
The kids with the guns, with the Nerf guns.
They look like they had a good time.
A lot of development there. A lot of character development there.
Josh McCuga, to you. Why is this movie number one?
I said it at the beginning. I'll say it again. Monks bowling really ties this whole movie together. Monk's bowling.
Mm-hmm. Kevin.
Oh, there's a hawk that doesn't die.
There it is.
You got you.
Tim Geddes, why is this movie number one?
It's the dance scene, man. Like, the dance scene. I want you guys to know, like I said earlier, that for 30 years of my life, the only Karate Kid movie I had seen was this one. Bring up Karate Kid to me, the thing that comes to mind first is monks dancing. So for 30 years, that was Karate Kid to me. So I hope that's the reason.
Sorry. For me, you guys are crazy. This is definitely number four.
Oh, okay.
It's funny. It's funny.
I sandbagged you guys.
Yeah. There we go.
This isn't just a bad Karate Kid movie. This is like an epically bad movie.
It's weirdly bad. Because like Karate Kid Part 3, you're like, yeah, you're dead right, Andy. Like, it's a bad movie, but it's entertaining to the point where like, this is so absurd. Yeah, but I'm in on this. This one's just like, this is one of those movies that does the cardinal sin where I kept pausing going, how much fucking longer is this? How much longer can I listen to Julie complain about her hawk and these one-dimensional characters just take up screen real estate? Let's just move on.
Again, this movie is just extremely boring. And even the final fight scene, just your movie can be really, really bad, but you have to nail that and nail the hype. And I think it's easy to do that because Part 3, terrible, dumb, bad movie. But even at the very end, you know, during that, I guess not at the very, very end, but before they go train Daniel and Pat, and then he's like, can you finally train me, Mr. Miyagi? And he's like, yes, Daniel-san, yes. I will. I'm like, holy fuck, they're going to do it. And then training montage, and the movie ends, and Daniel-san's like, they're all happy, and he's like about to hug him. He's about to bow. He's like, ah, oh, screw it. And they hug anyway. Like, I still had happy tears, even though that whole fight scene was terrible.
Yeah.
This whole final fight just absolutely sucked shit. It was just really, really bad.
Yeah, part of me was hoping that one of the barrels next to him blew up and just killed them all. What a great ending.
You know what we haven't even said this whole time is the movie just starts and this kid is already picking on Julie.
Yeah.
There's not even like a motivation for it.
Like how long has this been going on?
Yeah. Like has she been living in this hell of all elite guys just harassing her for being her?
Well, it seems like he had a crush on her, but he hates her. Like I don't know, it's just terrible.
I think Ned secretly hates himself, but that's a movie for another day.
Clearly. Well, I'm very happy that we got through this because now we get to move on to Cobra motherfucking Kai. I cannot wait for you motherfuckers to watch this shit. So here's the deal for In Review for the rest of the year. We got Tenet coming up this Thursday that we're going to be doing for Nolan In Review. Then we are going to be off for 2 weeks until we come back in the new year, where we will be doing Wonder Woman 1984, and then the Thursday episode, I think it is, it might be Friday, I'm not sure, around there, first week of January, we're going to do one episode that is Cobra Kai seasons 1 and 2. So you guys have the 2 weeks off to watch the whole seasons 1 and 2. It's not that much content. It's about 4 hours a season-ish. And then we're going to talk about it. Very exciting stuff. And then that following Monday, we're doing Karate Kid Season 3 because it comes out that Friday. Very
Cobra exciting. Kai Season 3.
So excited.
Oh, yeah. Cobra Kai Season 3. We so get hyped, motherfuckers. Let's go.
They made it. Stop. And they called it Cobra Kai. It's so cool.
Yeah.
So cool. They didn't call it the Karate Kid.
Nope.
Which is, by the way, a name and has probably I would say a little bit better name recognition than Cobra Kai, but not much. Cobra Kai is pretty, people know what that is.
Cobra Kai's decided rad as a name.
They called it fucking Cobra Kai. That is so dope.
Andy, where's your hype levels for Cobra Kai right now?
I mean, it's hard for it not to be overhyped because when you and I had that back and forth on Twitter, so many people replied like, Andy, you haven't watched it yet? Yeah, get ready. This is going to be fucking awesome. So I'm trying to temper my expectations, but it's really difficult too because it just seems like everybody thinks this is like an incredible series.
Incredible is a word.
To be clear.
It's not incredible.
Everything you enjoyed about Karate Kid 3, they just deliver that. So
Okay.
With some of the heart of Karate Kid 1 and 2.
Yes, I mean, look, I'm not expecting Emmy award-winning writing or acting or anything like that, but I am expecting again Fast and Furious levels of hype.
Oh, you're there,
and you're gonna fucking get it. I can't wait. All right, anyways, love you guys, Makuga. Thank you for joining us. We will see you again in 2021.
Yeah, buddy.
Until then, love you. Goodbye.